Federated just wants to say thanks to all local businesses in and around the state of Minnesota. You are our community partners, our neighbors, our families, and our friends. And when you need Federated, Federated is here to help. Visit federatedinsurance.com or call your local marketing representative to access trusted resources you may need during this pandemic. At Federated, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Oh, it's fun. Crazy. It's painful, but it's wonderful.
What is the name?
It's Royce Unchained.
And it is Royce Unchained. Zolgad and Royce here. And Patrick, we come today to spend Unchained remembering 100 years. Sid Hartman.
I only have 57 of those. I first met him in 63 as a copy boy in August 1963 at the Star Tribune. He was the sports editor. He was writing five or six columns a week. They're very notes heavy back then, you know, and more, he didn't have the long interview segments he has now. And heck, I don't even think he had a tape recorder then. Could it be? 63? Probably
not. Maybe not.
No, I remember.
Maybe not
in
63.
Because he used to walk into the office with this, like, old program or something and a briefcase that was overflowing with crap that wasn't open.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was open. And with his notes and, you know, on pieces of Kleenex and,
so you didn't have to transcribe I did.
No transcribing.
You're lucky, man.
And, I don't know when the transcribing started, but... he became extremely dependent on it after a while that became sort of his deal, that he would have interviews transcribed and his Sunday radio show stuff. But that's not the Sid that we grew up with. At least I didn't. The Sid I grew up with was, you had 40 inches a day of notes that were relevant for the most part, and not, later on, it became more difficult and to accumulate that kind of information. And there were people that, there were people competing more vigorously with him later on and years later. And we relied much more on long interviews and stuff like that later on. The great Sid, the Sid at his greatest was 50s, 60s, and 70s. When, he was breaking stories like Ara Parseghian is leaving Notre Dame and stuff like that, and everybody in the country was calling him crazy, and 24 hours later he was correct because his source was the guy who was going to replace Ara Parseghian. So he wasn't terribly concerned when everybody, a lot of people say, "Oh, was I right about this?"
Right.
He didn't have to. He didn't have to be right about this because Dan Devine, who was leaving the Packers, he knew Dan Devine from Proctor High School.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dan Devine was leaving to replace Ara, so he wasn't too worried about people saying, "You're crazy." But the Chicago Tribune, in the Chicago newspapers, and when Sid broke that story in 74, was it? When Sid broke that story in 74, they covered Notre Dame like it was a home team.
Sure.
I mean, they had beat writers, and they went to game. They had sent columnists to all their games, and, they had a lot of Catholics in Chicago, and back then, I grew up in a good Irish Catholic family, and the 11th commandment was cheer for old Notre Dame, I mean, if you didn't cheer for Notre Dame, there was something, you had to go to confession.
Right.
And so that was a huge, huge story, and he knew all those Notre Dame guys and Iowa guys.
Is that the greatest scoop?
Yes, I think so, because it was national, I mean, certainly Bud handed him he leaving the first time. That came out of nowhere. We didn't know that was going on either. Bud handed him that one. Locally, that was huge. I mean, there's dozens of them. I've told this story before, obviously, but the all-timer was I was the slot man, which if people don't know what newspapers are, back then that was the guy in the middle of the sports desk every night who was laying out the page and telling, people how much. I mean, you had a lot of power then. You didn't have a makeup editor. You were the you moved the copy.
Yep.
And you made the decisions on what the page was going to look like. And Ralphie Reeve, was our Viking beat writer, and he found out from Bernie Ritter, one of the owners who owned the St. Paul paper and was right upstairs, that Finks was leaving. Jim Finks was leaving because he and Max were in a battle. Finks wanted 5% to stay and a chance to buy 5% to stay. Max wouldn't do it. Max was kind of, I think Max Winter wanted a little credit for the success the Vikings were having and was getting none, as he should not have, with Finks made all the trades and Bud, you know, did the coaching. And but we had the scoop, you know, that we were, the next day we were going to say the top of the St. Paul paper was going to be Finks leaves Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
Finks to leave Vikings. And Ralphie was in the office writing it because it was off February, maybe, I don't know. And he said, I said, you got that done yet? And he said, well, I got to call Finks. I said, no, don't call Finks. He'll call Sid. And Ralphie and Finks were tight.
Yeah.
And he said, he won't do that to me. And I said, yes, he will. Yes, he will. He will call Sid because he doesn't want to face the wrath of Sid for the next 40 years of his life.
Yeah.
And Ralphie called Finks, and Sid had it the next morning, just like we did.
Yep.
You know?
Well, that's the incredible thing about Sid with his fastball.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day, he would do whatever it took to get the story. Like, I don't think people... Because people now think of guys like Schefter, right? These national guys who also work for leagues that pay leagues.
Mm-hmm.
This was a different animal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was. But the wrath you faced if somebody else had something that he didn't have. I mean, I saw it in person when the Timberwolves first started. And, you know, until early 80s. And the Star Tribune, Lowell Schrader at the Pioneer Press created Charlie Walters to compete with him for notes. He had a free run, basically. TV would do, they didn't do any reporting, you know, they did 3-4 minute newscast at night and they, you know, went out and held up the, but they weren't fighting for, you know, they might run into something once in a while.
Right.
But they weren't fighting for the news, right?
Right.
And there was nobody else fighting for, the only competitor was, you know, the Pioneer Press. And we basically just took our beating. You know, we just knew it. And then when we did have something, we trusted that source not to tell Sid, which was a big mistake because he would beat them bloody if they failed to give it to him. And I heard one. Charlie had some, it's got to be 91.
So Sid is 71-ish at this point.
Yeah, 30 years ago. Sid, yeah, 30 years ago. And you know where I sat in the corner there at the Star Tribune? My desk was down there, and Sid, and then a copy, what do we call the copy boy? Copy news assistant, whatever the hell we called him. Then I was a copy boy, sat in the next desk, and they would take the phone call after the secretary Terry Ferris would leave for the day. They'd take the phone calls there, and Charlie Walters had a note on the Timberwolves quoting Bob Stein. Something, I don't know. Not like we're going to fire Musselman or anything. I mean, it was not huge, but Sid got him on the phone right next to us, and basically made every threat known to man. That if he ever read anything like that, if Charlie ever had anything like that again, it was over, and he was going to put him out of business. And I mean, he was hard. It was my way or the highway with Sidney. Yeah.
But that was 91. To your point, 91, Patrick, he was 70 plus years old.
Yes, yeah.
That's the incredible thing.
Oh yeah. Well, he was a genetic freak. There's no doubt about it. And
well, he broke his hip at 96 and kept going.
And I was told last night that basically, well, Chad told me this, and I don't think he'd feel bad about it, but basically Sheldon Burns and Pat Smith did the surgery, and Sheldon, who was his internist, who, you know, loved Sid and did his all to keep him going, told him, you know, Chad, guys at this age are lucky to last 3 or 4 months, you know, when they break their hip, and you gotta prepare for this. And 2 weeks later, he was at PJ Flex press conference, strong-arming PJ, guilting the hell out of CJ.
Sitting up front, by the way.
Yeah, and guilting the hell out of PJ to promise him that he would always appear on his Sunday show just like the other coaches had done. I mean, his drive was for news in the newspaper. His second drive was for radio guests on Sundays on the show, and he would... Oh, yeah. He would just beat these guys into submission, man.
The sports hero.
Oh yeah, that was.
He would beat up Pete Rose to get him on.
Oh yeah, yeah. He would. If he got a phone number. Well, Charlie Walters, Ed has admitted this. Charlie was a copy boy. That was long after I was gone, but Charlie was a copy boy, and Sid had, and Charlie envisioned himself as a. You know, becoming a sports writer and maybe becoming a Sid-like. I don't know what he envisioned himself as that post-baseball. This was his post-baseball career. But Sid left his phone, leather-bound thing that had numbers from 30 years in it, stuffed in that. Charlie grabbed that book one night and wrote down phone numbers. And
did he really?
Ended, oh, yeah, he did. He wrote down probably 300 phone numbers. And this was, you know, obviously way before cell phones. But if you got somebody's home number and he didn't change towns,
yeah,
you were good. You know, not like cell phones. If you get a cell phone number now, it's golden, you know, but they're harder to get. But, yeah, he was, you know, because that book was like, valuable.
Yes.
That was a valuable book. There was a lot of phone numbers in there.
He had one when I started at the paper, and it was that's the thing, though, is you know.
What was your first year?
89.
Okay.
I started at 19 in August of that year.
And that was as a news copy aide?
That was as a copy aide who took scores and transcribed tapes.
Okay. Oh, by then we were transcribing tapes.
And there was nothing worse than when he got back from spring training, which he still went to at the time, with 10 cassette tapes, double-sided.
And two-thirds of the time, the player wasn't identified.
Correct.
Right?
You had to figure it out.
If you had Tony, you knew, okay, that's Tony.
Yes. But if it was some...
He's still talking Cuban.
Reliever, you had no idea. Yeah. And then he would get mad that you didn't know who it was, but he hadn't told you.
Yeah. And that became a problem forever. But it was... it was an amazing way to do business, I'll tell you. Intimidation was one of his strengths, that's for sure. And pleading, Chad said last night, I'd like to have $5 for every time. Can you do me a favor? You know, every time he said, can you do me a favor? That should be on his headstone. Can you do me a favor? That meant you better tell me what I want you, what I want you to tell me right now. But I wrote a column today that, you know, the worst thing you can say about Sid is rest in peace. He never did that in his entire life for 2 seconds.
No.
I mean, he was always on. And the other thing about him, Judd, and you know this, great observational powers.
Yes, which by the way, was so impressive because you never sensed that he saw anything until you realized he saw everything.
Saw everything. And even though his hearing was lousy for 20 years maybe, right?
Yeah.
Kept getting worse and worse and worse.
Yep.
And they, you know, Starkey and everybody, they did everything they could for him. But, you know, I think one of his problems was... his hearing aids, he wouldn't turn on the machine he had and stuff. But anyway, but his eyes never failed him. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd wear glasses like to write or look at small stuff. But as far as being in a press box and observing what was going on, I think he had the peripheral vision of an athlete.
Yeah.
Because he always saw stuff. And if he saw three reporters huddled down in a corner, okay, what are they talking about?
Yes.
I got to find out what they're talking about. They might have some.
And then he would come in and bust it up, though.
Yes, yeah.
So there was no subtlety to what he saw.
No. He wanted to make sure that they weren't exchanging information that he wasn't in on, right? So, yeah, he was the most hard-nosed, as Chad said when I talked to him last night, most competitive person. I mean, this is a guy who covered sports a lot of time. Most competitive person he's ever dealt with because he competed with the Pioneer Press. He competed with the Star Tribune.
He competed with his own
people. He competed with his own
writers.
People. Oh, God,
no
yes.
question.
Yeah, yeah. And
I went through that, yeah.
And he competed with Chad. You know, yeah. If Chad had a guest, he'd try to beat Chad out for guests, you know. So it was an amazing... I'd like to have a real psychologist.
He's my top one, and you're my second, though, as far as the newsroom being in your blood, and it's contagious.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
I started there and saw guys like mostly Sid and you, and you think that you enjoy a craft, and then you get around the actual craft itself and realize that you love it.
I think we did for different reasons, though. You know, mine was, this is fun.
Yeah.
See, it wasn't fun for Sid. I mean, it was war. It was two dogs fighting for a bone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, but he had the other problem of having to defend every team in town.
Oh, this is, yes.
And where is that?
This is a whole nother thing.
And where that came from, I don't know. I talked to Tim McGuire when I wrote the piece on his 100th birthday. Which was much more of a bouquet to Sid than today. But and McGuire said he's a 10-year-old kid from North Minneapolis with no money, selling newspapers, hanging out with Kincaid Blumenthal and you know, all the rest of the Jewish mafia that ran town and selling them papers because they could sell them papers. And get tips from them and stuff like that. And he's accepted into that. And he said, McGuire thinks he never got over the need for acceptance. You know?
Yes.
That so he wants.
Makes perfect sense.
He wants to be, you know, he wants the Gophers to like him and the Vikings to like him and the Twins. He didn't worry as much about the Twins for some reason. He ended up across swords with Calvin and never really got, although once Polad took over, he wanted the Twins to love him.
Transcribing the tapes for the book that you did on Sid, mm-hmm. I noticed that the Gophers and Vikings were very different from the Twins.
Yes, yes. And the Timberwolves he seized because Marv and Harv were buddies of his, but also... Later on, when the Wild went to St. You know, that was offensive to Sid.
Yes.
That they built an arena in St. Paul. He didn't want St. Paul to have anything. And the reason is, going back to the 50s, when they were over here working with the Cowles family and the Star Tribune, the Star and Tribune then, and Charlie Johnson and him were working to get a major league team, their biggest enemies were St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
The guys in St. Paul had their own task force, built their own stadium, and threw up roadblock. They were trying to prevent they wanted to get the team instead of Minneapolis. And those, you know, that's why the two fat guys are shaking hands over the water. People don't realize that.
Right.
They think it's just, you know, it was a blood feud to see who could get the team. And Sid never forgave them for trying to screw up those efforts to get a Major League Baseball team. So when St. Paul ended up getting the hockey arena, that bothered him, you know. And, of course, for what, 3-4 years, he said they'll come back and play.
That was the great line. They'll be back at Target Center in 5 years.
Yeah, they'll be back.
They're never going to make it.
They're never going to make it. Nobody from you got to have Edina. And,
you know,
and
the incredible thing?
Then you'd go to then I'd be driving home from here when there was a hockey game and cars would be backed up to.
Oh, Edina.
Yeah. They'd be backed up to
you know the incredible
Highway
thing?
494.
Pat, the incredible thing about Sid, though, is he would fight you tooth and nail on any one thing. Tice is not going to be fired.
Yes.
But then as soon as Tice was, he'd be like, oh, he got fired.
Yeah.
Like there would never be this, you know, I was a real jerk about this. I said, there was always this. He was obstinate until he wasn't. And then I was like, yeah. Okay, I'll move on to the next
thing. The most obstinate I ever saw him was the morning that Chris Mortensen said that Denny is going to be fired, right? Yeah. Or when did he say? Did he say it that morning?
Yeah, I think it was that morning.
Morning.
Yes.
And Sid was hanging out, and there was, that was his famous no scoops. There were no scoops because when Chris Mortensen reported it at 9 a.m., it had, the decision had not, he didn't convince it. He was smarter than this, but he, his public view was, the decision had not yet been made, you know, mm-hmm. so there were no, so Mortensen was reporting something mm-hmm. that it was not certain to happen. Well, you know, yes, yes it was, you know, but
the no scoops line no scoops. Is one of the great lines. Yeah, of no yeah. scoops.
He was that morning. He was semi-deranged, you know, out there at Winter Park about 11 in the morning when we were waiting for the official news that he'd gotten fired, and he was just, he could not, you know, that was a bad crossroads for Sid, because that's when the national guys started getting all the news, you know. That was the first.
I think that was the first one that affected the market here.
Yeah, the most, certainly. Yeah. There'd been other. That's when, you know, 20 years ago, it was, you know, as I say, Sid was a really observant guy, and he might have been sharp enough to know, this is the world passing before us, that agents and, you know, the guys, you know, that all of a sudden what we were doing at the newspapers wasn't that important anymore. It's what ESPN was doing and stuff like that. That was a crossroads for sure. So, but yeah, I'm getting a lot of messages of condolences on the loss of my friend and stuff. And it's interesting because I certainly, in the long run, for all the problems that we had with each other, I admired the hell out of him, right?
Sure.
And I have the advantage of loving characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I can never turn on Calvin, you know, even though he was, got drunk and said bad things.
You were
things.
Best friends with Dark.
Dark. Oh, Dark's my...
One of the great characters
Dark,
of all
Dark's
time.
Dark's my brother from another mother. You know, we were as close as could be. But, you know, I also know that 75% of what he told me was BS. So that's fine. But Sid is... You know, it's not like I'm walking around moping that this occurred, but I am. I will miss the fact that we had one of the, maybe the most unique human being I ever met in my life. You know, mm-hmm. maybe, I mean, we had him in our presence, still trying to get a column in the Sunday paper. Like on Thursday with Jeff Day, 48 hours before he died, yeah. right?
Yes.
He had to be in the Sunday paper.
Yes, it's the most fitting thing of all time for Sid.
He had to be in the paper, even if it was, you know, somebody transcribed him an interview with Thielen, and it was, he had to be in there. And I wrote my column today, the reason he was great was that he, for a lot of years, he wanted it more than the rest of us, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, that we, in the 70s, I wanted a gin and tonic worse than I wanted a story, okay? At 11 o'clock at night, hey, the bars are closing, let's go. Mm-hmm. But he needed it. He needed it more. Until the end, he needed it more than the rest of us. I mean, needed it emotionally.
Yes.
And you know, we got guys that say, you know, hey, I'm off this week. I'm off today. He was never off. He was never off. If he had a condo in Fort Lauderdale. Were you ever down there?
I was never, no.
And it was on the ocean, on a big body of water, mm-hmm. the Atlantic Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably the 15th floor of a top building, penthouse, right? I visited twice. One time when the Gophers, he was down there, he came down and made himself stay down there for like 3 days when the Gophers played in the Micron PC Bowl or whatever it was, in before a screaming crowd of about 8,000 at the Orange Bowl, or no, not the Orange Bowl, whatever the hell, Joe Robbie Stadium then.
Right.
And I went up there. It's a gorgeous bluebird day, right? December day. I mean, the wind was blowing a little, but it's blue as could be. I walk in there, it's like you could be going into a prison in Saudi Arabia.
Uh-huh.
It's completely dark. The curtains are closed. These big, thick curtains are closed. I said, Zed, there's an ocean out there. Open the curtains. Let me see the ocean. And at the end, he ended up the last 20 years, he didn't go down there hardly at all. You know, I think he finally sold it.
But he
need got greater as he went on because he couldn't take the 2 weeks off to go down. And
if he was off and there was a scoop to be had and he didn't get a call from the office, he would get mad that you didn't call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he got to the point where it wasn't because of age or anything. He was too worried about what was happening back here that somebody else might be getting a story. There were other guys fighting for stories then, and he just, you know, he had this wonderful condo in Fort Lauderdale.
Was true till when? Was it 10 years ago or so that it slowed down a little bit? Because
no,
it lasts
more than that, longer than that.
15?
Yeah, well, he would have some. But
I mean, he was still very worried about scoops and in fact, didn't want the people at the Star Tribune to get sports scoops before he did until about 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, there was one time his scoop nation in the Twin Cities here went way beyond sports. Business people, he always had the faculty rep from the U in his pocket. You know, Bob Stein was the other Bob Stein, was his guy for a long time. And he always, you know, got those guys on his side, too. Those guys, the faculty rep, I think the faculty rep was a bigger thing in the Big Ten back then. They'd make decisions and they'd go to meetings and they'd have information for you, and he always had those guys in his pocket, and I think it got harder and harder to, you know, it was the University of Minnesota, which was his original beat, was such a smaller domain of bureaucracy then than it is now. If you had, he'd have the president in his pocket, he'd have the faculty rep in his pocket, he'd have every coach in his pocket. There was only 7-8 coaches, you know. I think the whole he had a little trouble adjusting to Title IX. We all did, but he didn't vary much from his. But I do remember him, like, if it became the hot thing to do, I do remember him showing up in 2004 to see those two games at Williams Arena when the Gophers women filled the, you know, he would try to jump on the bandwagon.
Oh, yeah.
But if it was the hot story in town, but. It's an amazing psychological study. I think I'm rambling here, but I just want you people to know that the old cliche, there'll never be another one. This is true in this case. There's going to be one of all the rest of us, but there's never going to be another 100-year-old man who's got to get who is. Near death, mm-hmm. who's got to get a column, no matter how uninformed. The hero of Sid's life the last 3 years, though, or longer, have been the two gals, the nurses, Larissa and what the heck's the other girl's name? The two nurses, the sisters who have, you know, basically taken care of him
took him to every game before the pandemic.
Since he broke his hip. Yeah, well, the teams would have a seat for Sid and then Sid's attendant. And these gals were great. And, you know, Chad talks about them with, you know, just absolute admiration and what they meant to him. But also Jeff Day from the paper. Mm-hmm. Kind of adopted, Sid adopted him because he always had a guy. You were his guy for how long?
Probably 3 years.
Yeah. And you, that meant you read the column.
Yep, if I was working on
it. Now, even then, when you became his guy, though, you still didn't have to type. You didn't have to type up the tapes then, did you? You were beyond
that. No, I was beyond that.
You were on the desk. But,
yes.
But you had the person.
I would get the column and read it. And
he'd like to have a specific tape transcriber, but he would take whoever he could get among the copy
And then beat
people.
You up until it was done.
Yes. But he always had to have the guy. And I was talking to John Rowe yesterday. And this is John. When I first came there, his guy was John Wiebusch, who ended up having a great job with
the NFL
publications.
He called me at one point, John Wiebusch Jr.
Yeah.
And Rowe said, that's a big compliment, John.
Yes, yes. But John Wiebusch was when I came, was in title a copy boy. But he was sitting on the desk.
Okay.
Because they put him on the desk. Because he was so sharp, and because Sid called him out of the herd and made him the guy that read his copy. Mm-hmm. Okay. That read his copy because he knew all the names and knew everything. And when John went to the LA Times, he then became a desk person, and actually they gave him a beat too here. I can't remember who he was covering. Was it Gophers? I don't think so. But I can't remember, but he was started. I mean, he was great. But Sid was in an utter panic because when he was leaving for the LA Times, he loved John, but not because of that, but because who was going to be his guy, right? Who was going to make sure that there weren't screw ups in there, right?
Yes.
And John Rowe told me, when John was there maybe 6 months or something and sit in, giving him the time of day, really, Wiebusch took him over one day and said, sit, John will be your guy. John will make sure. John will take care of you. And then, even if you have to call him at home, sit. John will take care of you, and then Sid gave Wiebusch his blessing because he found him another guy and he always had that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack told me last night. He said the last 8 years, the lowest moments of his life were when Jeff Day took a day of vacation. because he didn't have that guy.
I buy that.
He didn't have that guy he could trust.
Well,
you know?
And also, most of this was pre-Google, okay? So you had to, if you were in charge of Sid's column, you had to go get all the encyclopedias and media guides Division III college guides and look those names up, because that was the one thing.
Yeah.
The names were never going to be right.
No.
The greatest, I think, of all time is still Orville Burville, Daryl Bevel, the Vikings offensive coordinator. And we had a list. We kept the list.
I do not know what happened, but I remember when we're leaving the
office.
We're leaving the old building.
Yep.
I can't remember. When do we? 6 years now, I think. So,
2015.
Yeah.
I think it was last year.
I can't remember who I said it to, but I said, make sure the list gets to the new computer, and I don't think it did.
Kenny Chow might have the list. I thought I printed the list out before I left in 2011,
yeah,
but I can't find it. I got to go through my stuff.
Yes.
Every season, the Olsons would gather on their dock. With all the weeds and muck, no one would go into the water, except for neighbor Larry, who would stand in there to cool off amongst the thick weeds.
Hey, neighbors.
Larry.
But this season, the Olsons dropped a few Aquaside pellets into their lakefront. After just one application, the water was crystal clear, and turns out, neighbor Larry is a free spirit and a fan of skinny dipping.
Hey, neighbors.
Larry.
Oh, my.
Who nude? New.
Clear your lake or pond completely. Visit aquaside.com. State permit may be required.
The list of Sid's greatest gaffes and greatest misspellings.
What was Ramil Robinson? He had him as like
Rommel
oatmeal or something. It was just great.
But it was Rommel. We used to call him the basketball fox, Rommel, because it was Rommel or something like that.
Oh,
God. He was, the pranks were, of course.
Now, I'm not sure about Jeff Day, but the one thing, so the one question I always got during the time that I read Sid is, does Sid write his column? And I said, yes, he very much does.
He did, yes.
I go through and clean it up. But the most important thing at that time, and this was probably true until the last 5 years or so, the most important thing that you could do at that time was to keep it in Sid's voice. So yes. Sid always wrote, if you read Sid's column out loud, it had to sound like Sid.
Yeah.
So if you really went in and cleaned it up totally, you were doing Sid and the community a disservice.
There was one about a month ago that had coherent sentences and stuff, and I said, oh, Jeff got a little over. He got a little overcooked with this one
because
he made Sid. But until the pandemic, when he still came in the office, the last couple of years that I saw him in there, you know, and as a part-timer, I'm not in there, I wasn't in there that much. He would sit next to him. He'd come out and sit next to Jeff's desk.
Mm-hmm.
But he, for years, you know, would get these long, huge transcripts. It'd be like 12,000 inches of copy in there, and he could move the copy and put it where he wanted to and do stuff like that till, I suppose, 7-8 years ago. And then I think Jeff became more reliant on Jeff for moving the copy, but the ideas were always his, and the tapes, and even down to the end, it was it wasn't Jeff Day saying, I'm Adam Thielen, you know, it was Sid. It was Sid's idea to what he wanted as a lead and everything. He was still, well, I think they had an amazing figure in today's obit. I mean, somebody did a great job editing that obit that I wrote like 12 years ago.
I read it back then in ATEX, which has been gone forever now from the start. Yeah. I remember reading that obit.
The gist of it is still in there, but they did a nice job of doing that. But he wrote 119 columns this year.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
It is. I mean, it's fitting. 100. Yeah.
Hey,
I think Day was taking a 2-week vacation, so Sid had to take during the pandemic.
So Sid had to.
I can't remember. He just did not, the constant fight, and Glenn Crevier can tell you, the last few years was for him not to write.
Mm-hmm.
The battle was, I got to write a column on that Viking game.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't, Sid. We got 9 guys over there covering it. I don't have to write a column.
But guess who won?
Oh, yeah.
There was always a column on that Viking game.
Yeah, well, this year, they started putting short ones. Yeah, to have been his editor, Chris Carr now, Crevier,
Arnie Robbins.
For a long time, Arnie Robbins back then, was what a bloodbath that was always.
Arnie was the only guy that I think I saw control him a little bit.
Yeah, Arnie was
He had a little bit of control.
Yeah.
Glenn
would battle him, man. Glenn would battle him, but, you know.
But I think he actually listened to Arnie, and that might have been the one guy he listened to. Besides that,
but
his ideas
even
were
Arnie,
ideas.
When he got over the top, would make McGuire call him in and let him have it. This was when he was, you know, when the promotion of teams or stadiums or, you know, but a lot of McGuire stuff was aimed at what he said on the radio.
Yes.
I talked to McGuire. I called McGuire yesterday to make sure that he knew, and he already knew, but he'd been crying, you know.
Yep.
He loved him.
Oh, yeah.
Even though he hated him at times, he drove him nuts, Tim McGuire. But
the two biggest things I think that Sid fought eventually were one, the national media getting scoops. But the first one that I saw was actually what you just said, which is the slow but sure conflict of interest, which he referred to forever. Because he had been so used to being, why can't I promote the golfers? Yeah, why can't I sell tickets?
Why can't I call up Trevor Laws at Apple Valley and tell him if he
Blake
goes
Wheeler
to Notre
tweeted
Dame?
That he threatened him. He's a hockey player. Yeah, the man hated hockey.
Yes.
He threatened Blake Wheeler. He called Blake Wheeler's mom, I guess he tweeted, and basically said, your kid better go to the golfers.
Yeah, Trevor Laws, the Apple Valley kid who went to Notre Dame, the legendary wrestler, defensive tackle, played the Trevor Laws, and, you know, calls him up and says, you go to Notre Dame. Notre Dame! He got a chance to go to Notre Dame. You go to Notre Dame.
Never work here.
Never work here.
The never work here line's my. I love that line.
Quentin Carroll, probably. I mean, Jay Carroll. He goes back with Jay Carroll. I can't. I haven't talked to Jay to find out how many threats the family received when Quentin decided to go.
But you're right. That was a radio thing to a large degree by the end, where he couldn't understand why he couldn't promote the teams or basically threaten athletes to stay here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was. Laurinaitis, James Laurinaitis, whose dad just died, and I got to know Joe, because through Jim, through James, not because I went to went to animal and hawk wrestling matches, but I mean, he was one of the few guys who basically I told Sid to stop calling. I think
Sid was for years. He would always say conflict of interest. Everything's a conflict because he just couldn't understand why the hell we were this. We were supposed to be the back off.
I was trying to remember the first rival, the first writer that he had who he couldn't control in any way, and I think it was Charlie McKenna covering the Vikings. That was before your time. Mm-hmm. He hated him. Charlie had come in, and he was a kind of a hipster and a new age journalist. And Bud, things were in decline, and for the Vikings, the dynasty was over. And after was it 77? They won the Mud Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Was it 77?
I think that was 77, and then they went to the Super Bowl. Yeah.
That was kind of the end. Then they won they got beat the next week, and and Fran was going downhill, and they were going downhill. And Charlie came in, must have been early 80s, because Bud, maybe 80. And he started asking Bud questions that Bud was not used to having to answer after poor performances and writing stories about ineptitude. Oh, man. Sid hated that guy. He liked the St. Paul guys better than he liked Charlie. He hated that guy, And Such, basically, God loved Such.
Yep.
He and Such were tight as could be. And he turned on Such because of the Metrodome and basically got his column taken away from him. And that's how come Sid, that's how come Such came over and became a cityside columnist in St. Paul.
The entrance. The entrance to the building of Sid, especially
the drive-by shooting.
Talk about that, because it started.
Well, you saw it. Yeah.
Well, my favorite part was the fact that Sid would arrive. He would start coming back to sports, which was in the back of the third floor.
Okay, and we got to describe it, folks. You get off the elevator, you come in, and you take a right-hand turn.
But you could hear him when you could always hear him way before you ever saw him.
Oh God, yes. But the sports was what? How many yards? 40.
Yeah, probably.
50, yeah.
Yeah, 40, 50.
It was just an aisle it's just a made-up aisle between desks and walls and stuff like that.
Yep.
And on his left, as he came in, would be news side reporters, and there's a little
The city desk was right there.
City desk, and then cubicles for all the writers and the reporters, and then he'd get then there'd be a gap, and then he'd get to sports, and he'd start running into the clerks, the AGA clerks, and have insults for all of them. But he'd never remembered a name, so they were all nicknames, because he'd make a word association with somebody, and then, hey, Mr. One Page, which was Graydon Royce, and then he'd have an insult for all of them. And we called it Sid's drive-by shooting, It was unbelievable. And I wrote this in the ode I did to him on his 100th birthday. My favorite ever was Linda Gurley.
Yes.
Linda had a attendance problem. She was a very vibrant young lady.
Which, again, I never thought Sid realized until.
No, I didn't realize until. But she had a serious attendance problem because she had complications in her life with kids and stuff. And one day he's breezing to his office and she's in the last desk next to mine, right before he takes the little right to go into his office. And he stops like one of those cartoon things where the guys, somebody's chasing you and you want to make the quick turn. He pulls up and he said, Cal Ripken Jr., it's great you could make it today. And who knew that he didn't know that she wasn't there? But he knew every little thing that was going on in that office because he wanted to know if it was affecting him.
It was the most remarkable thing, though, that he knew a clerk or a copy aide. He knew their attendance.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He was.
He is the greatest nickname guy I think I've ever come across.
God. Yes. Yeah. Although he was, sometimes it would get right down to the basics, like the guy out at Winter Park who collected the urine samples.
Oh, that guy, okay.
Yeah, urine samples. He became Mr. P.
Yes.
Yeah. You know.
Tom was Mr. S.
Yeah.
Because he always had a bunch of bleep.
Oh.
You know, like notes and stuff.
Oh, really?
Goes, hey, Mr. Give me that note.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and he would beat you up for a statistic that no one else cared about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He would get. It would get in his head and it couldn't be removed.
But the arrival at the old building was one of
hilarious.
My...
What, 440-ish, right?
Yeah.
430, 440.
And it would set off grumbling from some, fear from some, and outright amusement from people like me.
Oh, yeah. Well, there were times when I was in there writing and I was done at 4. I'd hang around just to see him come in and see what new insults he might have. And I think Jay Ewalt had the distinction of having two nicknames.
He's the only one I saw.
He was George Halas Jr. and Mr. Shirts.
Yes.
Because he wore bad old shirts.
He wore, you know, like a collection of bad Hawaiian shirts that you wear all winter long.
Yes.
Mr. Shirts or George Halas Jr.
Or George Halas Jr. If the Bears were in any way in the news, he was George Halas Jr., but otherwise he was Mr. Shirts. But the other great one I remember is Jim Foster. You know, who was his guy for a while.
Okay.
He was not the desk guy, but the transcriber,
mm-hmm.
You know, the guy he relayed on. And suddenly, after 5 years, and Jim worked in business forever after he left us, I mean, after he changed departments, he called him Anderson. He, like, for 5 years, he started calling Foster Anderson. You know, Anderson. So then one day he's yelling at Anderson, you know.
Yeah.
And Foster says to him, "It wasn't me, it was that Foster guy." And Sid all of a sudden gets this look on his face like, "Oh, yeah, that's right, his name." You know, he doesn't admit that this moment of recognition.
Did he give up then? Did Sid give up?
Well,
and walk
then
away?
He started calling Foster. Yeah, he did.
Okay.
But then he probably checked with somebody and said, "Hey, what's that guy's name that I've worked with for 10 years? What's his name?" But he says, "No, it
Good
was that
Foss.
Foster guy."
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, he's sitting around and this is the time that I'd like to still be a gin drinker to sit around for about 3 hours in the court bar, which no longer exists. Dan Kelly's is closed.
Yeah.
And tell Sid stories. It would be.
And when can that be done with the pandemic, too?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. I don't know what they're going to end up trying to do here. There's probably nothing they can do. Poor Sid, he missed out on the 100th birthday celebration at Murray's when they were going to have people come in. He missed out on all that stuff, and now. Now he's not going to see the end of the pandemic, so they could have, you know, the memorial service. And so he's probably only going to have, he had to settle at death here with only about 10, 12 celebrations of his life that we've done since he was, when was the first one, 75? The big one when Steinbrenner and all those guys came
in? Yeah, I think that's right. I think that was 75.
You know what else is an interesting psychological study? How... the more controversial you were on the national stage, Martin, Steinbrenner, Knight, the better. Sid took advantage of the fact that everybody else thought somebody was a jackass, right?
Yeah.
He took advantage of that to become their friends. And, you know, it was, I mean, Knight would, you know, those friendships that he developed with them were tactical.
Oh, yeah.
They were not, boy, I really think these guys are great guys. Now, he came to like them, obviously, but those friends, everything Sid did was tactical.
Mm-hmm.
There was Dark Star's great quote about what's the philosophy of your radio show? And he said, what can the next 3 hours do for me, Dark Star? Sid's strategy when he first got hired selling newspapers in as a 10-year-old for 90 years is, what can the next 90 years do for me, Sid Hartman?
He did a hell of a job of it.
Oh, he did.
I also think the competitors liked Sid because he was so competitive. So,
yeah,
like Garnett and Moss and George and Knight, I think they respected the fact that he was basically
tight. But he and Moss were tight in the sense that Moss would say, hey, Big Nose, how you doing today? He would insult them.
Oh, absolutely.
And Sid would take that as love.
And that's the thing, is Sid would come in that locker room, too, and hurl insults that no outsider would hurl.
No, there's some that we can't repeat.
He said one that I once saw a young kicker at the time who didn't make the team almost start to cry. And that was from Sid.
Yeah. Well, the worst ever was for the guy who knew the Bush sisters, and we won't get into that one. But how he got away with that one, I have no idea.
But I think some people actually did respect that because none of us were ever going to tread near that territory, and Sid could.
No.
And he knew he could.
No, but he wanted to be their friends, too, and I don't think the rest of us gave a damn. Now, I became friendly with guys just, you know, crew and guys like that, but not as a strategy, just as something that happened, you know. But he would, you know, there's no better way to tease him than to say, you know, boy, that crew and I really have a special relationship.
Oh, it would drive him crazy.
Or Mock, you know, Mock. Yeah, God, man, that Mock gives me good stuff, man. Okay, I got to tell you, are we done here yet? Almost?
No, keep going.
My favorite ever, and this is when I'm a punk kid, not writing columns yet, I don't think. When did Jerry Burns coach Iowa? So Evashevsky leaves. So this is
60s, right?
We're at Memorial Stadium. The Gophers, Hayden Fry has just come in at Iowa.
Okay.
Or maybe it's his second year. And we're up in that rotten press box at Memorial Stadium. And I know that Sid's tight with Burnsy, because I think Burnsy was in Green Bay for a year. Mm-hmm. So this might have been, Burnsy might have already been with the Vikings. But I know Sid's tight with Burnsy. And so in that Memorial Stadium press box, there was no room to behind chairs, especially a fat guy like me. But, you know, you had to climb over chairs to get into that first row down there. And I'm just doing a sidebar on some game. I never did cover the Gophers as a beat. I'm doing a sidebar, and I said to whoever was the beat guy, I said, you know, boy, that Hayden Fry is really doing a great job bringing back Iowa after Jerry Burns screwed up the program. I might not have said screwed up, but, you know, but I said it loud enough.
Yep.
And back then, Sid's had sharp hearing.
Yep.
And he came climbing over the steps to MF me, which, of course, was the purpose of having said that. You don't know Jerry Burns, blah, blah, blah. And he's screaming at me, and I'm going, high five. He's climbing over chairs.
No one was easier to get than Sid.
Oh, God, no. No, because he was.
Dennis Bracken made a career.
Oh, God,
made a career out of getting Sid.
Well, the parking ramp, the parking thing was the best. Vic from the garage sending Sid a note when we were remodeling the parking and across the street. And Bracken said in the ATEX, you could send these messages. And if you put enough ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, you tapped down so they couldn't see what's
in. But he had Vic from the garage, from the parking service, send Sid a note because he hadn't filed out paperwork for the new parking spots, that he'd lost his spot in the main lot, but we could find him a spot over on Plymouth Avenue on that building, and the shuttle would run every half hour. And Sid came in, read it, ran out of his office, took a right, and was heading for Parkinson's office when Bracken had to run him down and stop him. He had it printed out.
He was going to the publisher now.
Yeah, he was going to the publisher to get his, because his parking spot was like sideways in a crosswalk across from the building, you know.
Yes.
And we had a – the good part was, it won't be that bad, Sid. The shuttle will be running every half hour. That was the greatest of many wonderful pranks played on Sidney.
Yes.
Oh. But the other thing is, Sid was one of those guys whose idea of a prank in return was to, like, drop a bucket of water over your head. There was no subtlety in Sid's prank.
No.
Sid's return pranks came with a sledgehammer.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. No, that's well put, though, because there was no – that. The man, to his dying day, was not going to be subtle about anything.
No, that's true.
Didn't even understand the concept of being subtle.
The word he never wrote a subtle sentence in his life.
But I do love the fact that on the day he passed, he had a column.
Yep.
Because I didn't think that would happen, but now that it did, it's the most fitting thing.
Oh, yeah, it is. And
easily the most fitting
thing. I
have
to talk to Jeff and find out. But I know that they wanted those Sunday columns of his, like, earlier in the week.
Sure.
So it probably did it on Thursday.
And it was Adam Thielen saying the Vikings could still turn things around
right.
on the day that they got beat by the Falcons.
By the time, not only beat bloody.
Yes, by a 0-5 team.
An 0-5 team that basically held them to one touchdown until when? The middle of the fourth quarter?
Yeah, it didn't matter anymore by the time they got it.
So, by the way.
Yeah.
On that point, Kirk ends up with a 90 passer rating.
Yeah.
Because he.
Great second half.
Garbage time, man. The GT the GT Hall of Fame. Put him in it.
He's the master of the box score.
It was sad that there wasn't a crowd in there yesterday.
Oh, it would have been outstanding.
Did they have any people in
there?
Yeah,
like 250 or
did
something.
Did they boo him?
No, I think it was
friends and family.
Yeah, they're not going to boo him. But it would have been, if that building had people, it would have been marvelous to see them. They would have turned. Kirk at halftime would have been, along with the rest of those guys, booed right off the field. It would have been great.
You know, maybe they should have pursued a one game option, you know, $2 million backup quarterback instead of a $4.50 one. So,
yeah, but they don't want to threaten Kirk. That's the problem.
Well,
that's their fear is that they'll have a guy that would threaten his security.
Well, he shouldn't be feeling too secure today. His quotes after the game were,
I agree.
I'm going to get benched.
All right, sir.
All
right. Great stuff. Thank you very much,
all
Patrick.
Right.
Talk to you.
Yes. If you have questions about your retirement savings, do what I did and work with a person that knows what the heck is going on. Work with Josh Arnold, Mr. Money Talk. My guy Josh will give you straight talk and not sugar-coated advice. Learn how you can benefit from Josh's focused approach by setting up your own no-cost, no-obligation 48-minute consultation to review your investments. Call Josh now, 952-925-5608.